This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Your Radio Doctor does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, products, physicians, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on Your Radio Doctor. Always consult your own physician. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, WPHT, HD, WOGL, HD3, Philadelphia. From the Cherry Hill Volvo Studios, where relationships matter. Always live on the free Odyssey app. It's time for the Delaware Valley's first radio doctor.
On call every Saturday afternoon at 5.
This is Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
Listen, 7 months or 10 months is an absolutely exceptionally short time frame to produce this vaccine.
Your health determines your life, your longevity, and your happiness. Let your radio doctor lead the way with your medical education. Your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie.
Good afternoon and welcome to Your Radio Doctor. I'm your host, Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Today, our topic is alcohol use disorder, in the past referred to as alcoholism. We're a nation struggling with rising numbers of patients dealing with substance use disorders. Opioid deaths have skyrocketed because of fentanyl, yet more people died from alcohol use in 2022. The Center for Disease Control reports that it's a leading preventable cause of death in the U.S. One in five deaths in people ages 20 to 49 result from excess alcohol use. Maybe alcohol gets less attention because it's legal, it's accessible, and it's socially acceptable. Here to share very important information about alcohol use disorder, how you recognize it, and how you get help is Dr. Ming Wang, an addiction medicine physician. He's also the associate medical director at the Karen Treatment Center, where he is also the medical director of the Older Adult Program. In addition, he's a fellow in the American Society of Addiction Medicine and the Pennsylvania Society of Addiction Medicine. He's also a clinical assistant professor of psychiatry at the Penn State College of Medicine, and he takes time to teach local medical students and residents where he's on faculty at Reading Hospital. Welcome, Ming.
My pleasure to be here, Marianne.
This is such an important topic, and I decided to separate it from other sources of addiction for that very reason, because it gets less attention. It doesn't seem to get the attention because it's legal, it's socially acceptable. In fact, I think sometimes when people walk into a party and they're offered a drink and say, no thanks, not tonight, other people might think something's wrong. Am I right about that? Isn't that the flavor of our culture?
That's right, Marianne. Alcohol is what's described as an insidious substance, and alcoholism, or nowadays referred to as alcohol use disorder, is rather an insidious disease. And some of the reason for that is because alcohol is legal if you're of age in this country. And when people consider alcohol use disorder or alcoholism, they're not thinking the global picture. They're only thinking about, well, you know, my loved one drinks too much. But they're not considering other parameters that in addiction medicine we consider that renders a person with alcohol use disorder.
So, Ming, how would you define alcohol use disorder? And is it the same as alcoholism?
They're very similar, Marianne. Now, NIAAA, National Institute on Alcoholism and Addiction, NIAAA defines alcohol use disorder as impaired ability to stop or control alcohol use despite adverse social, occupational, or health consequences. you noted that NIAAA defined it by listing many different parameters, not just social but or occupational, but also health consequences. And this is a spectrum. It's a disease of a spectrum that can be defined anywhere from mild to severe. And today, given that you know as well as I do, alcohol use disorder, or the old term alcoholism, is considered a medical illness. And given that, the definition of alcohol use disorder is a medical diagnosis based on the DSM-5 criteria. And so that's the definition of alcohol use disorder as per NIAAA.
And Ming, we see alcoholism or alcohol use disorder sometimes carries over from generation to generation. So are genetics a risk factor? Are there specific risk factors other than habits or being pulled into, you know, a group that socializes a lot, something like that?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And nowadays in medicine, we've come to having a better understanding of a risk factor of alcoholism. And still 50 to 60% of vulnerability to someone developing alcohol use disorder is genetic. There's a genetic predisposition. And today with our sophisticated genetic research, we also understand that there are certain there are many genes, but two of the most common ones that we talked about today is the ADH1B and the ALDH2 gene that's associated with higher risk of drinking. Now, that's only the genetic component of it. We, in this field, we use the term epigenetics, meaning that there is a genetic predisposition, but also the environmental factors, very important. And so there are many risk factors to one expressing their alcohol use disorder if they have a genetic predisposition.
So that might include maybe mental health disorders or somebody's drinking patterns, right?
Absolutely.
Somebody's drinking partners, you're in an office where they socialize That's after right. work. Let's talk about those issues.
And some of the most common additional risk factor aside from genetics is, you're right, mental health concerns, mental health issues could be depression, anxiety, PTSD, unresolved trauma issues. But one of the most common factors aside from genetics is stressors in one's life, whether that's work stress, social stressors, family stressors, financial stressors, and also age of onset of alcohol use plays a huge role in expression of alcohol use disorder. Earlier the onset of drinking, the greater the risk of developing AUD. And also one's drinking pattern, heavier drinking pattern, tends to have a higher risk of progressing to alcohol use disorder.
Well, I would think too, as I'm reading your website, or for our listeners, your website has extremely helpful information. It's a great resource for material that anyone can read and understand and learn really nuanced information that might apply to himself or herself, then take a better look and say, maybe I fit into one of these categories and here's a place where I can get help. Because some of the examples I read on the website were, for instance, somebody had been a binge drinker through life and they only drink a couple times a month, but on that day they might have four or five drinks. Or it's easy to go to a wedding. There's a cocktail hour. You might have one or two drinks. Then there's wine through dinner and a drink after. So you can see how people can, over the course of several hours, have, am I right, 4 to 6 drinks in one night?
Mm-hmm.
As a GI doctor, I see a lot of young people with reflux or heartburn. And one of the triggers for heartburn is alcohol. Other things too, caffeine, nicotine, but alcohol for sure. So I always ask specifically, give me a quantity, not just do you drink or not. And then I ask young people with bad reflux, do you drink? And they might say, yeah, just one night a week. And then I say, well, what does it look like? Maybe a 6-pack and a couple shots. And it just rolls off their tongue. They say, yeah.
That's right.
So we were saying earlier, alcohol doesn't get much attention because it's legal. But it's also, I think in their young minds, it's not drugs. Do you find that?
That's right. Yep. Yep. And because it is legal, you could procure alcohol from a store, from the gas station, from the grocery store. So it seems like it's fairly benign. And as long as, you know, the irony of this is people who consume alcohol, perhaps more than they should, if they're still relatively functioning, at least in their mind, in at work, at school, in the family, they feel that it's not problematic. And curious enough, when alcohol use disorder was defined based on the DSM-5 criteria, that's a diagnostic statistical manual, the criteria, there are 11 criteria, and not one of those 11 criteria speak of the type of alcohol you consume, how much is consumed, what frequency is consumed, okay? And there's a reason for that, and because that really doesn't matter how much they're drinking, how often they're drinking, what they're drinking, as far as defining alcohol use disorder, but it's what happens in their life and how it affects people around them that really defines alcohol use disorder. For example, some of the criteria in the DSM-5 is that has your drinking pattern, has the way you use alcohol impacted your relationship with family, friends, and loved ones? Has it impacted your work obligations, your home obligations, your school obligations? And not one of those mentions frequency or amount.
Wow. And as we say, examples of somebody who's been a binge drinker. And I don't think a lot of listeners know the definition of binge drinking is more than 4 servings within a few hours on a particular day for a woman, more than 5 servings for a man, which, as we say, if we use the example of a wedding, that's protracted over several hours. People don't realize that's considered binge. So somebody might drink in that pattern through life, then develop a problem later in life when they have more time in their hands, say with retirement. Or there's the young teenager who drinks very heavily in a crowd, and a year or two out of high school, they have a problem. So tell me, and you said something very interesting about access. During COVID, during the pandemic, liquor stores were considered essential and they stayed open. Mm-hmm. Isn't that ironic in itself? I mean, at a time when people were isolated and more likely to reach for alcohol, let's talk about the impact of the pandemic on alcohol use.
We certainly here at Care and Treatment Centers, we certainly appreciated the increase in the numbers of relapses, even for people who have been in recovery for a period of time. And we noticed there was a surge of relapses and people coming back for treatment. Now, curious enough, NIAAA did a study of the first year of the pandemic, okay? And they noticed that alcohol sale in the first year of the pandemic went up 2.9%. And there's also data speaking to the number of death related to liver disease during the first year of the pandemic, and all went up. It all went up. And so certainly the pandemic period, you know as well as I know, that was a stressful period, not just for the not just for Americans in this country, but globally. It was very much a severe stressor. Therefore, again, like I said before, one of the factors that leads to increase in alcohol use and alcohol use disorder is external stressors.
Exactly. And I remember reading that death from excessive alcohol intake increased by 26% in that year alone in 2020.
That's right.
And when a worldwide problem, a pandemic, as opposed to a local crisis, when you think that the whole world, there's no escape, the mental anguish that people felt, people going to different sources for relief of that stress, they might exercise more, they might talk more, or they might reach for alcohol. Maybe even people who never did before, yes?
That's right. And we have seen that too for people who has never had a prior episodes of treatment, who came in during the pandemic period because of alcohol use disorder. And that's an example of that epigenetics. Perhaps these people has genetic predisposition that was not expressed, right, until the pandemic came along And with additional stressors in their life, their AUD finally expressed itself.
And that's why every story is different, and that when you approach somebody with a program, the beauty of a place like Karen Treatment Centers is that you treat the whole person and try to lead what led to that issue, that urge to reach for alcohol. Let's take a little break, and when we return, more from Dr. Ming Wang about alcohol use disorder.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, exclusively presented by Independence Blue Cross. If you have a question for the medical mailbag, just send a note to doctor@yourradiodoctor.net.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Welcome back to Your Radio Doctor. We're learning so much about alcohol use disorder, a very important topic because it's often put to the side when we talk about addiction. When people think addiction, what comes to mind? Drugs, marijuana, but they think alcohol is a little bit friendlier because it's socially acceptable, it's accessible, and it's legal. Ming, we were talking about, and I love the term you use to describe the damage that could be inflicted by excessive alcohol intake, because I think most people associate the medical risk of liver disease, cirrhosis. That's a common thought that people have. But I think we have to remind them of the other medical issues that could come about. So you use the term biopsychosocial. Let's talk about the biological effects, the physical damage that alcohol can cause.
That's right, Marianne. Oftentimes, individual feels that their pattern of alcohol use is not damaging their body. They're still functioning very well. They're still exercising, participating in events with the family, and they're not going to the hospitals for any acute event, and they think they're doing well. And like I said in the first segment, DSM-5 defines alcohol use disorder by certain criteria, 11 criteria to be exact. And not one of these criteria has to do with amount of alcohol consumed, the frequency, or what they're drinking. Basically, the parameters includes what happens in their life. How has it impacted their relationship with others, their loved ones? How has it impacted their work, their home obligations, their social recreational life? And has it been problematic enough where they've attempted to control it in the past but failed, right? Or do they feel like they consume more than they intended to? And so these all speak to the wreckage, the damage that comes with whatever their drinking pattern is. Now, the only two criteria of the DSM-5 that really may not have anything to do with what's going on around them is tolerance and withdrawal symptoms. Those are merely physiologic phenomena.
And what is the DSM-5?
Diagnostic Statistical Manual. It defines many of these psychiatric diagnoses and as well as all of these substance use disorder diagnoses.
And Dr. Ming Wang, you're at the Karen Treatment Center, but you're also academic. You're an assistant professor at Penn State College of Medicine, so you teach residents and students at the Reading Hospital.
That's correct, yeah. And Karen Treatment Center is a private organization, but we are academic because we do sponsor ACGME-approved addiction medicine fellowship. So we have to abide by the standard of the ACGME, which is the accrediting agency for academic teaching programs.
And you practice evidence-based treatment plans. Research gives us evidence, and then we follow that when we choose therapy. But the other thing that's really interesting for people to hear is that the DSM, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, the manual that outlines the criteria we use to make a psychiatric diagnosis, you met the author of the DSM-5 description of alcohol use disorder. People need to hear that, and I love what you just said, that we know every story is unique. That said, little emphasis should be placed on the amount of alcohol they're drinking, rather the urge to reach for it. What is causing that urge? Would you say that's a good way to describe it? That they can't and they're not doing well at work, they're at odds with their spouse all the time, and those the really important markers and metrics that you look at when you decide to apply the diagnosis of alcohol use disorder, yes?
That's right. And the individual afflicted by alcohol use disorder may not appreciate that they are harming the loved ones around them, especially the spouse. The spouse is usually the first one to voice their displeasure with the drinking. And the individual themselves may not see any problems with that, but ask the spouse. That person will tell you exactly what is wrong.
So they're the really important social parameters. Now, psychologically, if a person has a mental health condition or they could develop one from seeing their life fall apart from the use of alcohol, you can't just say, well, Mr. Smith or Ms. Jones, stop drinking. You can't just take away the alcohol. That's sobriety. You have to understand what led the person to reach for the alcohol to begin with. Isn't that a fair assessment?
Well, the reason we speak of alcohol use disorder as a biopsychosocial ailment is that not only is the body affected by the amount of alcohol consumed, and most commonly people understand what liver cirrhosis is, right? But from a psychosocial standpoint, we're also talking about mental health issues, dysregulated mood. Perhaps the person does not have any underlying mental health disorder. However, when their alcohol use disorder progresses, especially to severe stage, it may change their mood to the extent that it appears to be a mental health disorder with major depressive disorder, heightened anxiety, and perhaps even paranoia and delusional thinking, depending on how the alcohol withdrawal is presented. And some of those mood dysregulation may look like a mental health disorder, but in reality, it's substance-induced.
Well, for instance, along that line of thinking, sleep. People say, I'll have a nightcap to help me fall asleep more easily. But really, alcohol can disrupt your sleep pattern as the night goes on. And that can, you know, if you wake up in the morning not refreshed or tired, that's going to change your mood. And then that's a great example of mood swing without a mental health disorder as such, but a result of the disrupted sleep. But when we talk about the biological effects, again, we mentioned liver disease, but sleep disruption might not be a lot of people's first thoughts. So it can bump your risk for high blood pressure, stroke risk, and as a GI doc, you know, a cancer specialist, it can bump the risk for multiple cancers. Liver itself, if you get cirrhosis, increases risk for cancer of the liver. Also cancer of the esophagus, colorectal cancer, even breast cancer. I bet a lot of people don't associate intake of alcohol with the risk for breast cancer. And maybe stomach. And of course, head and neck, the mouth, the voice box or larynx, and the throat. So I think what's wonderful about a place like Karen is that you explain that so well, and you're helping people understand why it's important to get a grasp and look for even, you know, one weekend of hard drinking. Isn't that called holiday heart syndrome, where people can go into atrial fibrillation?
That's right. The holiday heart syndrome, which is basically AFib, that resolves after the holidays when the drinking slows down. That's correct.
So what are some of the unique issues that excessive alcohol causes in women? Because that's a separate issue that you explained very well. Alcohol, obviously, to excess can be harmful in men or women. But I think women need to hear this explanation, and hopefully it will leave a mark on them. Can you tell us about the water content, for instance?
Yeah, what you said about the biological effect of alcohol on organ system is correct. And it's commonly, we talked about the liver disease, but it's not just about the liver. It's about the heart. It's about the kidneys, about the musculature, and the central nervous system. Let's not forget about the brain. You know, the good old term that people used to say, the wet brain, right? And it also affects the bone marrow. So I often tell patients that think of alcohol as a toxin to every single cell in your body, when consumed in excess. And that's how the alcohol is going to impact your body, not just the liver, but people with congestive heart failure from long-term heavy use of alcohol, people with cognitive impairment because of neuronal cell death, brain cell death as a result of a large amount of alcohol use. Certainly, you know, once at the worst case scenario, someone actually develops liver cirrhosis and enough of the liver is damaged, and which causes the liver not able to sustain life, no longer conducive to life. And then we're talking about potential liver transplant there.
Wow. And you also mentioned mental health. It can bump your risk for dementia. If you're destroying nerve cells in the brain, it's not going to help prevent dementia, that's for sure. So I mentioned women for a second because you have a whole program, or I should say a whole segment of your website. Women have less body water content than men, and alcohol dissolves in water. So a woman who's the same weight as a man, her alcohol level is going to be higher, and the effect will last longer. Second thing is, there's a chemical we know as ADH, or alcohol dehydrogenase, that helps metabolize alcohol, and women have less of it. So with these two factors, less water to dissolve the alcohol, less ability to break it down, it's going to have more of an effect on a woman's brain and body than on a man. So a woman becomes intoxicated more rapidly, and the toxic effects on their organs, etc. It's just a little more dangerous for women than for men, yes?
That's right. What you just talked about is generally correct. And, you know, men and women, different body makeup, the fat muscle ratio, the water content is all must be considered in how the alcohol affects the male and the female body. Okay, that part is true. So in general, just a general rule of thumb, women typically don't drink as much as alcohol to have the same impact on their body, their brain, and their the rest of the DSM-5 criteria, their impact that it has on their life. And also, aside from just the male-female differences, we also need to consider some older individuals. You know, the NIAAA also offers data on older individuals, those are 55 years old or older, and we're talking about a different subgroup there again, because of the changes in their physiology.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I know with women, it could disrupt menstrual periods, so that's going to have an effect on fertility. It can also increase the risk for miscarriage. Does it affect a man's fertility at all, the way obesity can? Obesity can affect sperm count. Does alcohol have a negative effect on a man's fertility as well?
That has been shown. That has been known that it also affects a man's fertility with long-term use of alcohol. I believe, I'm not a urologist, so I can't definitively speak to that, but I believe it also reduces their sperm count and also changes in their the male-female hormone ratio. That's in a man. In men, there's also female hormones, right? There's testosterone, there's female hormones. It changes the ratio.
Right, which is really thrown out of balance when cirrhosis comes to town. Stay with us during the break to hear about this week's Real Champion, and when we return, more from Dr. Ming Wang. And now for your real champion. I call this segment the Marguerite Schroeder Terrace of Hope and Healing. Marguerite Schroeder is a woman of many talents. She's an attorney with a degree from Rutgers School of Labor Management, but considers her most important achievement to be her degree in alcoholism. The seed of addiction was planted in her childhood. Her father was an alcoholic who abused her mother and then abandoned them. Marguerite then became the victim of her mother's trauma and became an adult herself at a very young age. As a 4-year-old, she aimed to be the perfect child so she could win the love and affection she so desperately wanted from a family that couldn't provide it. The first signs of addiction came in her 20s, though she didn't realize it. She married a divorced man with 2 young children, in debt, and a heavy drinker. This triggered her own alcohol use, and as a busy, devoted wife, raising children, and building a successful career. She later realized she made a lot of important decisions while she was drunk. She passed up an audition for the Metropolitan Opera, and when she learned that she was pregnant, she didn't want to complicate their situation anymore, so she ended the pregnancy and had a tubal ligation. At age 26, she had her first hospitalization from alcohol poisoning. That compelled the couple to stop drinking, but they did it without professional counseling. Marguerite felt she didn't need help. She wasn't an alcoholic. So for 30 years, she focused on caring for her family in an unhealthy marriage. And though she wasn't drinking, she was very unhappy and continued to bury the trauma of her past under the perfect picture on the surface. When she arrived in her 50s, she revisited her past and thought about missed opportunities like the opera audition. And what if I had that baby? What happened to my hopes and dreams? Well, she got a divorce and began seeing another man. And on February 1st, 2008, 30 years after her last drink, she decided to have a glass of wine. And then she couldn't stop drinking. 11 days later, she was hospitalized with a blood alcohol level of 0.425, which is 5 times the legal limit and often spells death. The dark days filled 2 more years. She finally sought counseling and agreed to visit Karen treatment centers, but it wouldn't be a straight line to their door. She still remembers driving to her first visit with a case of beer on the front seat of her car, and she was drunk. It took several more attempts before she fully committed, but at one point during treatment for detox at Karen, a priest came to visit and encouraged her to get out of bed. His words still echo in her mind. God wants you here for something, because you should be dead. She tells her story in a blog for the Karen Treatment Centers, where she has found joy in recovery. When she landed on the Karen doorstep, the detox nurse ushered her in. She felt safe, secure, and warm because Karen provided the nurturing and love that she was seeking from the time when she was 4 years old. I had the good fortune to speak at length with Marguerite the other day. She talked about her mission as a voice for the voiceless. She's articulate, sensitive, wise, and humble. Her first message is that so many focus on the getting sober piece of treatment. She emphasizes the more important piece is recovery. Blood alcohol levels determine if a person is sober, but the real question is what created that urge to drink? A past trauma? Genetics? Marguerite found success in the program by searching for underlying issues. She now has a better understanding of her own DNA after a good look at her family tree. Her maternal grandparents were immigrants, so her mother didn't have an extensive education to deal with the trauma of abuse which affected her parenting skills. Marguerite's maternal grandfather was an alcoholic, then her mother married an alcoholic, and when Marguerite came into the world of trauma, then she married an alcoholic. Marguerite's mother gave birth to her at age 26, and Marguerite ended her own pregnancy when she was 26. Recovery includes behavioral health care, but mental health care is also vitally important. Forgiveness is not of the act, but feeling like you are no longer hostage to your DNA. She's come to understand all that and doesn't want to replicate it. Marguerite wants to help any person she can, but here's the call to speak for women and their unique journey. Women are nurturers and often put the needs of family, friends, and coworkers before their own. Women need to love themselves first because keeping secrets can destroy us if we don't get help and the respect we need. The most valuable advice Marguerite received was from a psychologist who said, "You'll know you found your mission when your wounds become your gift." The deep frustration she had felt for years as a provider had now become the core of her mission. Karen Treatment Center sits on 200 acres. And one day, therapist Kate Appleman said, "Walk with me." And the two women climbed South Mountain, overlooking the beauty of Berks County. When asked, "What do you see?" Marguerite said, "Hope." And that terrace is now called the Marguerite Schroeder Terrace of Hope and Healing. Marguerite has gone through experiences herself and now has the opportunity to help others through her work at Karen. She understands that addiction to alcohol is an insidious, chronic disease. It is so important to seek treatment and remember on a daily basis, you have something that can be triggered again and could do so in a devastating way. Marguerite has never left Karen. She was a patient. continues to be a volunteer and is now a board member, hoping that her story will encourage someone in the dark night of the soul to think, I can do this too, and leave this life to move forward. We salute you, Marguerite Schroeder, your real champion.
Today's edition of Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross, can be enjoyed anytime, anywhere, at your convenience. Just download the Odyssey app and search Your Radio Doctor. It's health education on demand.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, now Saturday afternoons at 5, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC.
Welcome back to Your Radio Doctor. We're very pleased to have Dr. Ming Wang from the Karen Treatment Centers as our guest, and we're learning a lot of very valuable information about alcohol use disorder. Ming, we just talked about the difference between men and women and the effects that excess alcohol intake can have. Let's talk about another demographic, people age 55 and older. You're the director of the program that addresses alcohol use disorder in older people. So tell us about the survey by Karen Treatment Center that was just published in February of this year that's really vitally important.
Yeah, with different demographics, certainly we should talk about older adults. In this country, older adults is defined by those age 65 or older. And in consideration of alcohol use disorder in this population, we have to understand what's going on with a body when one gets older, both men and women, okay? And changes in the organ system, especially the central nervous system, that renders that older individual more vulnerable to mood-altering agents, whether it's alcohol or even prescription medications. And so when we talk about risky drinking in the average younger adults, when it comes to older adults, those numbers start to get smaller. Okay, in other words, older adults' recommendation for a man is to have two drinks or less a day, and for females, one drink or less a day. Right. And so this speaks to that vulnerability of this population.
And I think it's important that Karen, where you are, did a survey of adults age 55 and older that was just reported in February. And you learned that very few adults that age and older talk to their doctors about substance abuse, alcohol, drugs, despite having a long-term relationship. In other words, as I mentioned earlier, every new patient I see, and when they return, I say, do you smoke? Do you drink alcohol? Do you do illicit drugs? For our listeners, we call this the social history, because if a patient has terrible reflux or even other GI symptoms like constipation or diarrhea, certain GI symptoms can result from the nicotine in cigarettes or too much alcohol or caffeine. So then I say, okay, if you drink coffee, how much? A cup of coffee a day, that's a lot different than four or five cups that you drink through the day sitting at your computer. So let's say you only drink on Saturday night when you go out to dinner. Is that one drink, a glass of wine with dinner, or do you have a drink at the bar, one or two with dinner, and maybe a nightcap? We need to know exactly what's happening in a person's life, because the other issue here is that liver metabolism slows with age, right? So maybe when you're 40, you can handle two, maybe three drinks in an evening. But with age, now one to one and a half makes you a little sleepy and you don't want to drive home. So liver metabolism in itself with aging, and then as you mentioned, we have to consider mental effects, because the alcohol can also mix with prescription drugs. That's what has to be distinguished. Does alcohol play a role in making a drug less effective? or if they're on any other kind of antidepressant. Tell us about that mix of concepts.
And you're right about that, Marianne. Older adults tend to have a larger list of home medications. And oftentimes, some of these medications do not mix well with alcohol or other mood-altering agents. And for example, if someone who was on psychotropic medications, psychiatric medications, some of them can cause a little bit of sedation. And in conjunction with the typical alcohol use they have at home, it may make them a little bit too sedated, too sleepy, which perhaps could result in a fall, right? Which is they could injure themselves badly that way. And also, older adults tend to be prescribed, in my experience, more mood-altering controlled substances, such as painkillers and sedative hypnotics, such as Ambien, Klonopin, Xanax, which with addition of alcohol, certainly places that person at risk for respiratory depression and overdose. And so, especially an older adult, we should do a little bit better in our yearly visit with our patients to ask them a little bit about their alcohol use pattern, with even just a very, very quick screening questions.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the baby boomers are coming of age. We're all becoming senior citizens. And with that, many baby boomers, I guess having lived during Woodstock, have brought long histories with them into older age. Drugs, cannabis use, alcohol, and pay a price for that after a certain amount of time. But CBD in itself, now that that's becoming acceptable, and we did a whole show on CBD because when you get a nice, neat script with the hospital logo and the doctor's name and you think, okay, this is all good, a lot of times it's where you're getting those gummies. You're getting them from a corner store, you know, and it's not regulated. So a lot of times that gummy, you don't know if it has 2 milligrams or 4 milligrams. And CBD does not have any psychoactive components, but THC. That does have the psychoactive components. And without regulation, sometimes that can taint a CBD product. So if people are mixing those things with alcohol as well, I guess they're all things that should be considered because they could put people at risk. So the American Cancer Society and other societies, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, have outlined guidelines, as you mentioned, maximum of 2 servings of alcohol a day for a man, 1 serving a day for a woman. That doesn't mean you have to drink 2 servings a day if you're a man, but it also means you don't save up your week's allowance for Friday night and drink all 14 on Friday. But a serving, and we repeat this so often on the show, beer is not safer than hard alcohol, right?
That's right.
So the equivalent of a serving is 5 ounces of wine, a 12-ounce can of regular beer, or 1.5 ounces of 80% proof alcohol. So, I mean, if you think of a craft beer probably has more alcohol in it than a regular 12-ounce can of beer. I guess sometimes it's hard to measure these quantities, yes?
No, that's right. It is sometimes hard to measure, but this what you listed, the 12-ounce beer, 5-ounce wine, 1.5-ounce liquor, that is the standard serving size. But then again, nowadays we have so many new products out there with a little higher alcohol content. IPAs, for example, has higher alcohol content, and even some of the liquor, the spirits, have much higher alcohol content than others. And so with these readily available products, and then earlier you mentioned the CBD and the cannabis product, more and more individual states are legalizing marijuana. Now, when we talk about CBD, we're basically talking about a product, a component, of the cannabinoids that has no psychoactive ingredient. But then again, if we're talking about cannabis from a dispensary that has active Delta-9 THC, now we're talking about a different ballgame there because these are high-quality products, so to speak, versus the ones that we might see couple of decades ago that has kind of lower THC content. So what that means is that in addition, with use of current available cannabis products, whether it's leaf or edibles or vapor, it's going to have higher THC content, which when mixed with even just usual prescription medications or alcohol, could cause problems as defined by the DSM-5 criteria.
As you mentioned, CBD is not psychoactive. It's the THC that is. And I learned from guests on earlier shows that some of the edibles are tainted with THC. It's not meant to be there. But since edibles aren't regulated, people should be aware of that. We talked a little bit earlier about what metrics or parameters a person can look at in themselves. Am I arguing with my spouse all the time? Am I slipping at work? Are my kids not paying attention to me? Or am I paying less attention to them? What's happening around me? And if you do listen to us today and really sit down and think about it, what are things you should be looking at in your own world? How do I know I need help? And now the question is, how do I get help?
That's right. That's always a baffling question. And how I present the questions to the individual that potentially has alcohol use disorder or any other substance use disorder is this: can you be a better employer if you didn't drink? Could you be a better father and spend more time with your children if you didn't drink? And people always kind of think that, no, it's not affecting my work. I'm still doing a pretty good job bringing in a paycheck to support the family. But when you present it in another different way, can you be better? Can you be 100% if you didn't drink? And most of the time they'll say, yeah, I could probably do better. And same goes for all the other substances.
So treatment options. Maine, when a person comes to a comprehensive center like Karen, you're going to do individual psychiatry sessions, cognitive behavioral therapy, we'll talk about that in a minute, and individual and group support sessions, as well as detox. So one message I know you like to drive home, that if you've been drinking and all of a sudden you decide the light goes on, I want to stop. Please, listeners, do not try to stop alcohol on your own. Depending how much you drink, sudden withdrawal from alcohol can be very dangerous, even fatal. You can die if you're drinking on a steady basis and a heavy enough intake. So please get help and go to a program, because these are experts that know how to help you stop drinking safely. Many treatment options, including psychiatry sessions, support groups. Ming, going back, what is cognitive behavioral therapy? We have about a minute and we'll carry it on to our next segment.
Yeah, cognitive behavioral therapy refers to a form of therapeutic modalities that help the individual process certain information. And, you know, that's why it's called cognitive. It has to do with brain and the thinking. And so it allows the individual to just kind of process and think in a little bit different way through professional facilitation.
And when necessary, you're going to address coexisting psychiatric disorders and general health problems. You're not just focused on the alcohol. You look at the whole person. Because as you say, chicken and egg. Excess alcohol can cause physical problems, but sometimes a medication or a physical issue a person has, or a psychiatric disorder, makes alcohol use disorder more likely in that person. Let's take a little break, and when we return, a wrap-up called Your Weekly Prescription.
Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie is presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
And now for our final segment of Your Radio Doctor and the topic, alcohol use disorder. So much valuable information from Dr. Ming Wang from the Karen Treatment Centers. We talked about the biopsychosocial aspects of alcohol use disorder. How does it affect you physically, mentally, and socially? How does a person recognize that they need help, and where do they get that help? They're going to come to you, Dr. Ming Wang, and how are you going to treat them?
The one message I want the listener to hear loud and clear is that it's never too late to get help, regardless of age. And help is readily available, at our facility or many other facilities around the country. And typically the first order of business, front and center, that always has to happen is that withdrawal management to come off of the substances, whether it's alcohol, benzodiazepines, opioids, whatever that is, that's always the first order of business. Our facility, a care and treatment center, we provide detox services. And then once the individual is free and clear of potential danger of withdrawal, then they will be transferred to their community where they will start to establish a foundation of recovery that hopefully will sustain them for the rest of their life. Okay, and what that looked like typically is with many modalities of treatment, including what Marianne mentioned last session, which was a CBT, okay? And this allows the individual to kind of start looking at themselves rather than looking outwardly at other people and blaming other people and finger pointing towards other people. And once a person successfully completes treatment, typically a 4-week stay, sometimes 6 weeks plus, they hopefully develop a foundation of recovery on which they continue to build upon once they leave here and go home to have a lifelong sustainable recovery. And certainly abstinence from all mood-altering agent is a criteria of being in recovery, but it's not the only one. It includes many, many different aspects, including proper care of the body, like we mentioned before, because it is a biopsychosocial disease, to maintain bodily health, mental health, and spiritual health.
Beautiful. And you mentioned CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. The brain is reminding you how to behave. Do you think that volunteering or using a person's time, like if a person has scheduled volunteering after work and they're going to go from work to volunteering instead of meeting their friends for a drink after work, do you think filling time with other activities that bring fulfillment and happiness is a part of behavioral therapy, just restructuring how you spend your time?
Those are activities that one gave up that they used to enjoy. Certainly does not hurt their recovery efforts. But I always encourage our patients to investigate and explore recovery activities, such as a 12-step program, for example, where an individual would meet very many like-minded folks who are there for the same reason, who could offer each other a certain type of support. You know, family who are supportive, that's great, but in recovery, members of, let's say, Alcoholics Anonymous could offer very, very different type of support that could be very conducive to a sustainable recovery.
Pure empathy. Somebody who understands what it's like to walk in your shoes. If somebody wanted to reach you at the Caron Treatment Center, I know the website we would prefer people to read is a great resource. Caron, that's Caron. Caron.org is your website. How would somebody call to make an appointment, Ming?
There's a number to call, and once the operator answers, just ask for admissions for interest in admitting to the facility, and the operator would direct you to the admissions department, where our admissions specialist will speak to you and make arrangements.
So that's 1-800-678-2332. Website Caron, Caron, Caron.org. Again, 800 678 2332. And remember, if you decide you want to stop drinking alcohol and you've been drinking on a steady basis, please do not try withdrawal at home. Sometimes in the movies, you see somebody who decides to stop taking drugs and they tough it out. If you stop alcohol without supervision, you can die. You can have seizures and die. Am I right, Dr. Wang?
That is correct. That's alcohol use disorder, typically in the severe category. And alcohol is one of those mood-altering substances that could cause fatality. So have to take care in how to manage that withdrawal.
And the help is there. Thank you so much, Dr. Ming Wang from Caron Treatment Centers. That's Caron, CARON.org. Fantastic information. We really appreciate your help, and I hope you'll come back soon because there's a lot more to share with listeners, and I know a lot of people have learned, I hope, where to get their help and how to really look into their own habits.
My pleasure to be here, Marianne. Thank you for inviting me.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor every Saturday afternoon at 5 here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Listen again to any of our shows or Real Champions on Audacy.com. That's AUDACY. A special thank you to our exclusive sponsor, Independence Blue Cross, for their continued support. We also appreciate our association with Helio.com, the medical news and information platform. Visit Helio, H-E-A-L-I-O.com, and search alcohol. Multiple articles will pop up and discuss association of alcohol with blood pressure, heart disease, cancer risk, and more. Next week, tune in to hear about the silver tsunami. Our aging population is expanding, and we have to prepare our medical system for a growing number of older patients with chronic illness and the need for assistance. Please remember to pray for peace in our world, our beloved country, in our families, and in each of our own hearts. This is your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, wishing you a happy, healthy, and safe week with the ones you love. Always here to remind you that your health is your wealth.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross. To contact Dr. Marianne and to listen to today's show as well as past shows, visit YourRadioDoctor.com. This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Audacy. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.